Thank you. So we will look at what was timetabled as grief, and Donna and I just rejigged it ready for today because grief is around us all the time. It doesn't really matter who we are or where we are or what we're doing or what kind of therapy we're doing. We always encounter it. So we're not going to make this into this is how to manage bereavement. Having said that, the accompanying notes, which you may not have had time to read to any great extent, but the accompanying notes are a lot about how to manage a bereavement or how to help a client manage a bereavement. And you haven't had enough experience yet with client work to be as familiar as certainly as Patricia and Donna and I will be with how often loss comes into distress. Would that be a good way of summing it up in a way?
Absolutely. It's really, really good notes, Jane.
Oh, thank
Because
you.
I work a lot with grief and they're
Yes,
brilliant, really
right.
brilliant. Yeah, brilliant notes.
Well, they are cobbled from somebody else's notes and they are cobbled from just how we speak to people.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, where do we start? I've got it out here. I mean, are we going to work through the notes? What would you like to? We could look at the very back page, which was actually a little experiential. Shall we do that, actually?
I think that would be great because
Would you like to do that?
we get the experience from a client's point of view, don't we?
Indeed, indeed. And we are also clients, aren't we? Because we're just humble human beings like everybody else. Are you all right there, Sebastian? I've printed mine off, which has been a help. But page 11 is the very last page of the grief notes that I only sent you on Thursday. So it's a bit of a tall order, but sometimes things work well. Because if we start with this, we'll see what comes out of the next hour or so.
That'll be great.
Would you like to have 5, 10 minutes going through this, putting some answers in? It's only, have I sent you a Word document that you could type it in if you haven't printed it out, or do you want pen and paper to it? Or maybe you don't want to write anything, you'll just think about it and.
I've got the online version. Happy to type in.
Yes, okay. So you could do that. Are you finding it okay there, Sebastian? Oh, you're mute. You're mute. We can't hear you. I've.
Sorry, I didn't print it. I didn't
No.
print it out. No.
No. So
So,
do you need to find the notes? I sent them on Thursday,
yeah,
I think.
I do
I
have
don't.
them.
Oh,
I
you've
have
got
them.
them. Oh, good. Okay. Well, look,
But go ahead.
scoot right on to page 11. It's the last page. And we're going to look at those questions personally for ourselves. I've never done this with a client, by the way. I wouldn't. We're not doing grief counselling. Let's make that clear. Sorry, that's not very clear, is it? This is an exercise for now for participating students. That's you.
But I don't think I have the option to edit the word.
It
Some.
oh, is it saying enable edit or something like that at the top?
Sure, let's check.
It is a Word document, is it, that I sent? Yes.
I think
So
let me save it and open it with the Microsoft Word. Let's see.
okay.
I'm just making notes on a piece of paper, actually, Jane.
Yes. Okay. Just on up. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's another way. That's a very good way, in fact, because it saves a lot of hassle. Have you got any pen and paper there, Sebastian?
So, do we need to fill this out just now?
Well, yes, just a few reflections, just what those questions were or are for you.
Do we need to share the answers?
And we might well share the answers. Okay. We'll just have it. We'll let this exercise do something for you, which
okay.
we can then bring into a discussion. But we don't have to. Nothing is. What's the word? Compulsory. There is one question near the end of that page. Did I encounter the stages of grief? If you haven't had time to look through the notes in any detail yet, then don't worry about that one. Hey, you don't need to worry about any of them. You don't have to do this at all. I am aware that the focus on this sheet is about bereavement, isn't it? And death and loss in that sense. How was it doing this exercise?
But sorry to interrupt, Jane. I'm just
Sebastian.
curious. So when we say grief and loss, that means you lost someone, no? I mean, for example, if I had, let's say, a very bad experience, I cannot class it as, I don't know, grief because I lost someone. I mean, a member of a family perhaps passed away, and then you might, experience grief, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, although I think in general life, we do associate grief with the loss of a loved one. Of course we do. And that's
Or
actually
maybe.
that's what I've written. But what can also be, it can be divorce. We can have the loss of a job. Some life event very often involves loss, something big which has affected us, a loss of money, a loss of, there's all sorts of things. So grief, I think it says somewhere in the notes, that grief is about the attached feelings. The Oxford Dictionary says deep or intense sorrow or mourning, or the cause of this. So grief is the feeling as a result of the loss. So Patricia.
So I think majority of people think when we talk about grief, we're talking about death of a person.
Exactly.
This is what I understood.
The death of a person can have a knock-on effect. For instance, someone maybe loses their home or other things, as a knock-on effect, say if the person, someone dying could entail someone then losing their home because of that death. That's, there's extra things can add on to it.
And arise, yeah. And then, of course, we're talking about the distress around it all.
Yeah.
We can talk about stress, but we can be very, very stressed causing distress, which is such a good word when we think about it, which we can carry for a long time. Do you want to share anything of what you've written? I've done mine, even though I know perfectly well that loss is around us all the time for all sorts of different things. My son lost his bank card the other day, and that caused a huge upheaval. We know what that's all like. So loss is around us all the time. But the big ones, yes, of course, the death of a person. But all mine have been about death of people, which has surprised me. But of course, I've lived a long time, so I've been quite a few.
Mine was about a dog.
Sorry, Bev?
Yes, mine was about my beloved dog. Yeah. I think, I never imagined that a dog could teach me the depth of the pain of loss and grief. Like losing a child almost unexpectedly. Yeah.
Did you lose your old dog?
Is this Bev? Yeah.
No. It's imminent. We need to put it down. She's got a cancerous lump on her foot, which is diagnosed. So that's going on at the moment. But and every now and again, the tears come up with that. But her mum, we had to put her down suddenly, age 10. And I didn't see that one coming. So, yeah, and that broke my heart, really. So, yeah, that was my first real experience of grief. My grandparents died, but I wasn't close enough to them to kind of have that real deep feeling of sorrow that can come. Yeah. So yeah, what you were talking about before is it doesn't necessarily have to be a person. And I actually, when I used to smoke when I was younger, and when I gave up, I went through a grieving process, which I think is really interesting that, the role that cigarettes played for me was kind of so deep on an emotional level that actually some part of my psyche went through a grief process at losing that support mechanism. Yeah.
And that's huge, Bev. And for you to have recognized that, and realized that it wasn't just, oh, I've stopped and I don't think I really like it, that actually this is loss. I've lost this forever. And that's sounding to me like a very big realization.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that. And of course, with our pets, I mean, it is a bit like a child. You know, it's that space in the house that is no longer occupied. Whereas with a grandparent who's a bit distant and elderly, and, you know, it seems more in the natural way of things. Okay, you know, this is life and whatever. And a dog is. Or some people say, I cried more when my dog died than when my brother died, or something like this, which is strange. And of course, it depends on the age of the brother, it depends on a lot of things. So it's associations as well, isn't it, with how things go.
It can be easier to handle sometimes crying over a dog than it can crying over the brother, because there could be some fear there as well. So it could be like the other way around. You can't process the brother's death, but you can process the dog's death somehow. So the tears come for that, but the brother's is still a bit sticky and you can't quite face it.
And so much of it, when it is about people, of course, depends on the dynamics of the relationship, which nobody can ever predict it isn't our business. The grief process can only belong to one person. We can support it, but that's pretty much all we can do.
Yeah, and it feels like there's something about attachment in it, isn't there? How attached are we to the thing or person that we've lost? We have a close relationship with a sibling, then maybe the grief feels more intense and deeper.
And if there's been difficulties within that relationship and there's been estrangement or something like that, that's an added, as Patricia was saying, an added complication. There's always something in the mix.
The grief can come and go. I mean, I lost my brother several years ago, and we had been very close. And I find myself right up to today, when I'm in certain situations, maybe I'm in a certain place and I'm enjoying myself, and then I get a sort of swamped by this, it's not right, he should be here, he should be sharing this with me. And that's many years after he died. And it's a very strong feeling that I get, that it's, you know, he's gone. And I kind of feel guilty that I've got some pleasure, maybe where I am, and he should be sharing it with me. I think there's, you know, it's different for everybody, but we never know, you know, there's no time frame with getting over your loss, I think. And just accepting that is very important, you know, for me anyway. You know, I just have to know I accept it. I can't fight it. I'm not going to change it. You know, I'm powerless over what happened. And my acceptance of it helps me kind of get through that very difficult feeling that I get often.
I hate the phrase, get over it. That comes up so much. And I don't think with big losses you ever get over it.
Yeah,
it's something true. You live with, it's just there, isn't it? It changes, it's not as intense, but I don't think it ever. I mean, I was so close to my nan who died in 2005, so nearly 20 years ago, and that still hits me like a ton of bricks, you know, every so often.
Yeah,
I haven't got over that, but I'm not carrying it with me every day. But I wouldn't say I'm, you know, out the other side, and it never affects me, because I loved her so much. I still do love her, because that doesn't change.
Yeah.
So I think you don't get over it. And I'm not, you didn't say that, but it's just, as you know, yeah. As you're talking, I hate those, you know, well, aren't you over it yet?
Oh, that's the worst thing. Did I use those words?
Not in that sense. You didn't. No, it just it came up, and I thought, yeah, that's the phrase I hate. And I have had people say, "Well, aren't you over that yet?"
Oh gosh, that's ridiculous. And
I don't speak to them anymore. There was one particular person said that to me. I think that was probably the last thing they ever said to me, because I just thought, I'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's not something you get over particularly. They'll always be there if they've got a space in your heart. I think it that's always theirs, isn't it, then?
And it should be.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, when these big life events happen, we need to attend to how we feel and what it means.
Mm.
I mean, I've had a slightly longer experience than you with that one, Donna. Not that this is a competition, but it was what I found myself writing was widowhood. That was the first word I wrote. And I took a long time to come to terms that I am now a widow. That was very, very, very strange. My husband died very suddenly 4 years ago. But the overriding feeling over, well, I can't say the overriding feeling, but the acceptance that came to me was, I've done this before. I know that it's going to be all right. I've done this before. And what had happened before was that when I was 20, my father died very suddenly. And so, they're not the same circumstances at all. But the fact is, there was something in me, perhaps it was autogenic, I don't know, that just said that was my, I won't say comfort, but, this isn't the end of the world. This is just how it is. And I know that I can cope, which was very useful in many ways. However, getting over it, no, absolutely not. Every time when I got married, he wasn't there. When I had my babies, he wasn't there. And in fact, the secondary loss, of course, is the loss of their granddad, who they never knew. Mm. And that's been only my grief. It couldn't be my husband's. It couldn't be anybody else's. Only mine. And of course, my mum and my siblings, you know, when the conversations came up, of course. But the depth of it could only be mine, because they were my children. And that's another, what can we say? Consequence isn't the right word at all. But attachment, maybe. The attachment that could never be formed. Mm. So who knows? But these are the things that we work out for ourselves in autogenics. I am going to tell an autogenic story about it. If this is all right, this session wasn't written for me. The day that my husband died, I actually found him. I'd come back from a few days away. I'm a nurse, you know, professionalism kicked in, and ambulance, everybody was there. And of course the tears, and my daughter and son came, and so on and so on. Of course, at the end of the day, my daughter and son were saying, are you all right, Mum? Do you want to stay with me? Do you want to come in? And I said, actually, no, I don't. I'd like to be alone, see what happened on this first night. Let's all have our phones beside us, which we did that first night. So that was a brilliant decision. I got into bed. I had done a lot of crying. I thought, I wonder what's going to happen now. I haven't gone to sleep without an autogenic exercise for so long. I don't think I could do it now. I'm going to do an autogenic exercise, lying in bed, and see what happens. And I did. After the second or third statement of my right arm is heavy, that was probably all I could do, or heavy and warm, can't remember. Tears welled up, and it was crying. Of course it was. And of course that's what I thought to myself. Ah, good. This is what needs to happen. And it was different crying to the sort of, I'm going to use not a very nice term, the sort of snivelling, wreck, nosy stuff that happens when we're trying to stop ourselves and we have to attend to other things and we've got to speak and we've got to be intelligent. That was different crying. This was the real, real deal. And it didn't last long. And people have said to me in their autogenics, it felt visceral. It came from really deep place. Yes, now I knew what that was. Really, really deep place, which I'd also had when my dad died. And after that, I decided to be ahead of the game and do intentional crying exercises every morning in the shower. Sometimes it led to real crying and sometimes it didn't. But I knew I was taking care of my crying need in a very conscious way. Whether that was good or bad, or whether I was denying something, I don't care. It helped me to get through those early days, and it was very good. So that, I'm going to shut up now. Sebastian, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just want to ask you, because I'm not sure, but I think it's slightly different than whatever we've been told. So with regards of the crying of loathing, in the notes, it said that it should not be used in conjunction with autogenic practice at least a few hours in advance, if I'm not wrong, isn't it? No?
Ah, yes, you're right. And that's a very good thing to clarify.
And sorry. And the second issue, and then I'll keep quiet. And then, I mean, the autogenic training, it's not actually an emergency tool. When someone, you know, it's in a shock because, you know, let's say the mother or father died. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but personally, I'm not. I mean, if someone is in a shock, I don't think AT might help at that stage if they cannot, break the feeling. I don't know.
Are you then suggesting that?
No, perhaps, I'm saying.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I want to respond. All right, then I will respond. I won't ask you. So the first thing was, not to mix up crying with,
yes.
However, this was not a crying exercise. I'm talking about when I was going to sleep and I was in bed, I had no idea what my normal bedtime exercise would bring me. And it brought me real crying. Oh, good. Thank goodness for that. So that wasn't associated with a crying exercise.
Cool.
But that's a very important point, Sebastian. I'm glad that's clarified, because it's just natural.
It was unintentional. Okay, makes sense.
Unintentional is the key thing. Yes. And of course, when I was doing my AT, I didn't care whether it was in shock or whatever the circumstances was. My normal routine was to do it. So I was curious. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will put that in mix. And really, the whole day had been quite traumatic. So I had no idea what I needed. So I just did what I normally do. And that was what the result was, the crying coming. So I wasn't using autogenics to calm me down or anything like that. In fact, it opened me up to a good cry, which is exactly what I needed. So anyway, look, I'm going to stop now because that's quite enough about one person. But that's, sorry, I was associating what can happen with autogenics. That's what I was doing, just as an idea. But everyone's going to be different.
Mm. Yeah, I had an experience after my dad died. I had a lot of crying come up, as you were saying, and it came from, God, I don't know, it felt so much bigger than me. It certainly wasn't snivelly tears. It was huge. So I obviously cried it out several times. And I also had anger, just this red hot anger come up in one of my AT exercises after my dad died. So obviously I came out and dealt with that towards the hospital. But it's incredible what you think you're addressing, because I knew I was angry, but there's knowing it and then there's feeling it on that huge level, a bit like the crying. It's difficult to put into words, I think, but hugely important.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I did my exercise on my... Sorry, Pia.
No, you go ahead. No.
No, I was just going to say that I did my exercise on my dad. But I then went back and I did it on my health, because I thought, I'm going to look at something. Because, again, we always think about, you know, who have you lost or what have you lost? My dad is a big one. But I went back and thought, I'm going to do it with my health. So I did all the questions again with my health and the difference.
Oh, you mean this exercise we've just been doing? Right.
I've just done it twice on like a death of a person and then something more personal. And it was a different time in my life as well. But it's like, did you get help? Well, I went and got help. I preempted my dad's death. I went to the doctors and said, I've got a lot to deal with. Can I have something? He gave me some tablets. I never took them, but I did the sensible thing. I went to my supervisor and I talked to my friends are all therapists, so I'm so spoiled with that. But yeah, I kind of did everything that you should do. But when it was my health, I didn't do anything like that. I gritted my teeth and I got on with it. Even though I'd lost my health, I sort of pretended that I hadn't lost my health. And I think it's so different when it's something of yours. And I know my dad was my dad, but he was his own person. But it was so different. When I lost my health, it was just like, no, I haven't, and I can't give up and I can't give in. It's a real weakness, I think. That's what I'm learning. I felt like it was a weakness of me. I had to protect it and not let it get to me and not let it interfere. Whereas my dad dying, I just thought, it's going to be crap. It was. It still is. But that was okay. So there's total difference with grief and loss.
And two different losses.
Two different things. Yes.
Thank you so much. Pia, you were going to say.
Well, this was really interesting to do because I know exactly what you're saying with that visceral crying. Yeah. Because I was 52 years of age and I had a massive loss. I lost the idea of having a good mother. So I realized I was 52. I've done personal growth for I was 14, always very self-aware, always curious about human behavior. But there was always something that was not quite right with my family history, and I didn't know what it was. I'd never been abused physically or anything. But I found out by a roundabout way that my mom, she was a covert narcissist, and I thought she was my best friend. And when I found out, it was such a shock. I mean, my whole life till I was 52 was built on a lie. I thought she was my best friend, but I was her golden child. I didn't even know what narcissism was, to be quite honest. I thought it was just selfishness and that was it, you know? So what I did, how I got through it, where was my notes, was that I did a lot of inner child work because the inner child in me had lost her mother. I mean, I never had a mother. Now I know how abusive she was. She manipulated, and I basically was just there to make her life better. So I can see all that. So what I did do a lot of inner child work with voice dialogue, and I had to have education in narcissism, what it actually is. So so now I help other people with narcissism. Mm. But what was interesting was that I had great help, not for my friends, because not a lot of people know what narcissism is and the effect it has on other people, because you think, oh, just get over it, it couldn't have been that bad, but they don't know what narcissism is, so they're not normal people. But anyway, it was so interesting to do this exercise because I wish I have had the offloading exercises, because I went through so much grief. I lost my mom. The idea of having, she was still alive, but my mom was gone. I never had a normal mom. I thought I did, but I didn't because I was brainwashed so much. So I wish I've had the offloadings. All of them would have been used a lot. However, I used AT like my safe haven because everything was shattered around me. Everything I found out, oh my God, my husband that I left 20 years after 20 years marriage, now I understood, oh my God, he was a narcissist too. You know, one of the reasons why I have moved my house was because I realized that person that came up in the AT meditation was this person that I lived on their land, and she came up all the time. And I thought she was really kind and everything, but she came up all the time. And then I realized, oh my God, she's a narcissist. I didn't even see it because I'm so when they're close, she came into my life some years ago, and I realized that she was a narcissist, and that was why I moved so quickly, because then they sold they put their house open for sale as well. So anyway, that was what AT did for me. It was my safe haven. That was all I had, because everything had to be re-evaluated in my life with friends and family, and everything was turned upside down. So thank God for AT. It saved my life when I was 12. And now I understand why I was suicidal, because I've since found out that my dad was a covert narcissist as well. I didn't know. I mean, I thought they were just normal people. Now I know they were not. But yeah, so he saved me that time, and it saved me this time. So there you go. That's my little story.
Thanks, Bea.
Thank you so much.
Dane, sorry, I just want to ask, I'm not sure whether I got it right, but let's say when it's about grief, let's say a client, yeah, the family member died, that it's going to last up to a year overall, yeah. So if they're, let's say, in a very tense, if they're, I don't know, they're, let's say, they're having a breakdown, how are we going to accept them to do the course if they're, I don't know, if they're depressed or if you're, maybe they might.
Sebastian, we don't have to worry at all about any of that. Donna, I'm just sorry I jumped in, haven't I? But look, this is their life. This is what's going on for them now. We do not have to judge whether somebody is going to be extra distressed or...
No, no, what I'm trying to say, is it safe to accept them?
Yeah, of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? Shall we ask it that way round?
Because some people, they might have suicidal attempts. Some other, they might need, I don't know, some sort of psychotherapy if they cannot get over the problem.
No, getting over isn't the point. They are learning autogenic training. It will be their process. And whatever happens in that process is what they need. And the chances are they will find themselves crying day one, week one. Or they might not. And it doesn't matter. Every day is a separate present day for your client, with or without the bereavement. You know that bereavement is in the background. You will have asked them how they are feeling. Sometimes, actually, this word suicidal comes up a lot these days. And people have arrived at an autogenic session with me in a group at the hospital and said, I'm feeling suicidal. And I'm thinking, oh, come on, we've got to explore that a bit. And so when we're in the session, they're not suicidal at all. They really are not. It's just a term that people use. We shouldn't be afraid of it. So it's quite right if someone is in a bereavement, forget the year bit. Nothing happens in 1 year. I've just told you about something with my dad, which was 56 years ago. And I can still grieve for the fact that he was never a grandfather to his children. And that is the living grief that we all have from time to time. And that's important. So you would never turn somebody away. In fact, all the more reason to invite them to autogenics, even if they've come to you because they are in a distressed state because of the bereavement. That's what they're looking for, some kind of peace or whatever it is. And we don't have to put any kind of time frame on anything, because it could be something else that has put them into a loss mode. They could have lost the job, their marriage has ended, and a lot of other things have coincided together. They are a person in distress. I would certainly take them on. Of course you would take them on. They're somebody in distress. We wouldn't not. Sorry, that's a very, what's the word? Strong statement. Sorry, Patricia and Donna, what do you want to add to that? There must be something.
Several things I'd pick up on. The suicidal thing. In my experience, people that are suicidal and looking for help are not suicidal. People that are suicidal will not ask for help. They will go away and kill themselves.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Basically, in a nutshell. Stark,
that's a stark clarity, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Another thing, Sebastian, you said something about a year that the grieving process takes a year.
I mean, when from what I know, yeah, theoretically, yeah, when someone, let's say a close member of a family dies, yeah, this is the normal process.
No,
but perhaps no, it can vary from individual.
No, I'm agreeing with you, Jane. I'd say absolutely not.
Okay. There is no such thing as a normal process. You've read the theories. People love putting theories in books, but there is no such thing as normal.
No. And again, going back to the getting over, I don't think you get over it. You just learn to live with it.
I mean, but you need to accept, for example, because if you're angry for the rest of your life, that's something else. You have to accept the reality. I mean, you know, that they're physically not there. Definitely, it's not going, you know, a part of you is still missing, but you have to accept the reality, I believe, isn't it? No?
Yes. Mm. And that reality can last for years and years and years and years. Of course, my dad isn't here anymore. It was devastating when it happened. There's no getting over. Mm. And if somebody is angry, then we've got our offloading exercises. I've done anger offloading about my dad, and he died years ago. And that helps me with my anger about other things, actually, as much as anything else.
Mm, yeah.
It's actually Virginia Ironside's book, You'll Get Over It, is a fascinating read because it is just describing how messy everything is, or it can be. So, Sebastian, we can't be too tidy with it. You can't say, well, a year, this person should be better. Oh, yes, they should be accepting it. They're angry. Well, if they're angry, we've got the tools to help them. We really have. We've got the gift. Well, depends. If someone is really stuck in a bereavement process, it might help to lift them into the expression of the grief through the crying exercise or anger or whatever else. But if they're not stuck in it, they probably have accepted it. And autogenic training just gives them something else, some other dimension in their life to help themselves.
If you feel, though, that maybe it would be too much, we can choose our clients as well. You don't have to take on everybody that comes to you. So if you felt that maybe it wasn't right for you or for them, then you can refer them on to somebody else.
In this case, could you give me an example? I mean, not example. For example, let's say if one of your clients, let's say the, I don't know, mother died 2 days ago. Have they just come straight to you to do AT just when they were in the crisis? Have you ever come across such a case? When it happened, I mean, or after a short period of time, you know, let's say 2 weeks, when they were dealing with the shock, because I think that at that stage, it's really hard to, you know, to concentrate or accept any kind of external help from my point of view.
I think if they came to you, you would work with them because they came to you. If they were in too much of a shock, they wouldn't be coming to you.
But what I'm saying, have you ever come across in your life as a therapist?
As a counsellor, yes, I have. As an autogenic therapist, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Had a death in the middle of it.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah, it's.
Have you, Jane? I don't think I have.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. There are so many different circumstances for death. We happen to have been talking, or I have, sorry, been talking about sudden death. But there are the other situations where there's been a long illness and someone has actually carried a load with them for a long, long time in caring for somebody. So the circumstances are so different. So if somebody arrived on my doorstep 2 weeks after a long-term illness and death process, you know, when we've had the dialogue, that's the time for me to be saying, what are you feeling about doing this? Oh, I really want to, they will say, and of course I'll let them. And we can always stop it halfway through if things get too much, but it won't, because very often having a long-term care process followed by a death is sometimes a relief. But then that might be where the guilt can come in, or something happens around that. And that's part of their autogenic process too. So we're going to follow the client as usual. So I think, Sebastian, don't worry about whether you will be doing something wrong. I think it will self-select. If the person comes to you, as Donna has rightly said, if they're seeking it out, then at least hear them, find out where they are. Donna's a counsellor as well. Donna might offer counselling before they start AT, just a little bit, just to sort of hear them, sound them out. I don't know, Donna, that could be an option, couldn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Or there's a bereavement during an autogenic training course. Oh, wow, that's a different ball game. So is that the end of a long illness and a death? And then that comes to the point where it happens. Does the person continue with their autogenic training? And I can't answer that. You can only ask the client. They might say, actually, I'm going to be really busy until the funeral. In fact, but I think after the funeral, I think that's when I'd like to come back. And then you can make sure they've got a hold exercise or something to keep them going. And then you make the appointment, and they might not want to come back at that point. So they continue their course maybe a few months down the line. This is the beauty of autogenics. We can be so flexible with how things are unfolding. And then I have had people who've come, they've got caught up with family issues, sometimes their own bereavement or an illness of their own or whatever. They've stopped the course after 4 weeks because it's just not practical. They've got treatments, appointments, whatever it is. 2 years later, they've come back. And I'm delighted to see them again. And we recap the start and they finish the course. That can happen. That's not about bereavement necessarily. It's about other circumstances. But the principle is the same. Flexible. How does it sound? Pia's nodding her head. Any doubts about what we're dealing with here? Actually, it's in the client's hands and in your hands. And as the partnership between you decides, I think this is the best for me. The client will know best.
Yeah.
The client will know best.
And if you've got any doubts, you've got a supervisor, or there will be, you know, you'll have access to have a chat with somebody.
Yes.
Outside.
In the end, the person's own choice is their own choice. In whether they continue with AT, whether they are in such a difficult state they actually can't do the exercises, in which case perhaps between you decide, hey, let's give it a rest. All of that, it is about choice. We are not responsible for all the choices that they make. We can suggest things, we can encourage, we can let them go, we can welcome them back. These are the good parts of autogenics.
Brilliant session. Thank you.
Thank really good. You all. Thank you. Do you feel that we've come to the end of it? Anything else to add?
I thought it was lovely to see, Jane, what was in I don't know where it was, where you talk about, or whoever written this talks about new parenthood.
Oh, right. Oh, parenthood.
Parenthood, you know, that this represent loss of the life which has gone before,
oh.
You know. And then it says here, thought, I wonder if postnatal blues, yeah, supposedly hormonal, and even the more serious postnatal depression are in fact manifestation of unresolved grief. In my work, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. That plus there is a part of them that lived in the fantasy that it would be different.
Yes.
Oh, it will solve all the marriage problem, or it will be so romantic when I sit there with my baby, and it doesn't match.
No.
So the fantasy part, just yeah. So they it's very good notes and grief.
Thank you, Pia. It's loss of expectation, is that one, isn't it? I thought I was going to be a loving mother, and I'm not sure if I really like this baby in those first sort of hours of giving birth, of days and weeks and so on. And of course, you know, and in your own situation, grief for the mother you never had, which is for a lot of people, that is massive. And it sometimes comes to them when they're doing autogenic training.
Yeah.
Or they make some sort of a remark. And I think, that sounds like grief there. Oh, no, I'm not grief about. And I'm saying, well, the mother that you wished for, who wasn't there for you, we know that now, don't we? The mother you never had, yeah.
And what you were saying about the crying, there's crying, and then there's that, I felt I was howling. It came from the depth of my being, this crying. And it didn't last that long, but... It just had to come out.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was so much healing in that. Yes. So much healing. Yeah. Yes. So much. Really, and really
these,
good.
These experiences that we have, we wouldn't sort of burden them onto our clients, not in the least. But when they say something like, I was surprised how deep the crying was and how quick it was. You know, just what you've been saying, I've summarized it. But, and we could say, yes, actually, the real, real stuff that goes far, far deeper than just the tissues and the eyes is really important. And maybe the body wouldn't have the stamina to take it on for any longer. Mm. And it does the job. Mm. Yeah.
No, good notes. I've read a lot of stuff, but that summed it up really nicely, what you've done.
Oh, thank you so really much.
Good. Really, really good.
Well, that's really kind. I was nervous about sending them out when we originally were going to do this session, and Donna said, no, do, when we come up to today, because I think that this is fairly common knowledge. There's another bit about parenthood and grief. I don't know if, I can't remember if it's in here. I don't think it is. But when our children grow to be teenagers, that's a grief.
Yeah.
That's a big grief, and I discovered that one the hard way, and I was helped through it.
Yeah.
But my daughter suddenly turned into a monster when she was 14, and other people are nodding their heads. and I couldn't let go of the darling little toddler with blonde curls offering everybody a toy cup of tea, and all the adults absolutely charmed by her and her wonderful smile and her beautiful way of talking and politeness and everything else at the age of three. Mm. What happened to that three-year-old who's turned into this 14-year-old monster? And I had lost her, and it was very, very important to understand that, so that we could move on together to this new phase of life where I didn't have control and so on. And it was a whole new area in my life where I learned so much. Mm. Giving her responsibility, giving her information. It's your responsibility to come home and get your school homework done. I'm not going to school. It's nothing to do with me. So it's your responsibility. And if you're not going to do that, well, that's entirely up to you. And it sounds like washing my hands of her, but of course it's said in a, this is what you need to know now, because you are growing up and this is your next phase of life and so on. And we have ended up the best of friends. We're fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another.
That's often everything, isn't there? I think there's loss. I mean, there's such
a lot of loss.
And I actually think, you know, that, I don't know if that's the same in England, but there is a sense of loss of feeling safe in the world here in Australia, mm-hmm. because of, you know, the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, we should have learned, and there's war everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy world we live in. So there's loss even for a settled nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's brilliant papers. Anyway, I'm very happy with this session. Thank you.
I heard I can't remember if it was a book or a paper or whatever I read, but there's something in my head about every decision we make incurs a loss.
Yes.
because you've chosen, that's how common it is. And it can go from, do you want a cup of tea or a cup of coffee? You know, something really, you know, a cup of coffee next time. But, you know, that goes on to every decision we make incurs a loss because we choose something over something else and we lose that particular cup of tea. That relationship, every decision incurs a loss.
Yes.
And like Beth was saying about addiction, I mean, you can't go through, you know, addiction and come out on the other side. So I don't believe, I mean, I haven't seen it, if we don't confront the loss.
Mm. Yeah.
Because otherwise we will be stuck in, I want that because I can't, if we can't move away from not having whatever it is, then I think loss is such an important thing to learn to live with. I really do. And I think AT is such a beautiful tool, you know, to go through those times. Well, I found anyway.
And it could turn itself on its head as well, that we think we're grieving and we're in loss, but actually there's other things that might come from it that we have actually found again with some new aspect of life or whatever it might be. So there's that side. And coming back, what were you saying about, Donna, about the choices? Yes, decisions. Every decision incurs a lot. I love that. I haven't heard it quite put in those words before. That's lovely. But also, there are some decisions where actually we have to decide not to decide. And then, of course, we're having to weigh up the option. We're not quite sure how it's going to go, but the decision can stand. I'm not deciding right now. And so, but that's a slightly different topic.
But then you are losing... But then you are losing knowing.
Yeah. Yes. You are losing knowing. You're quite right there. But maybe it's too early to know properly. Yeah. So, hey, you know, there we go. We've got it all around us, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in the end, should we kind of sum it up in autogenic terms? Loss is all around us anyway. Anybody that you take on is going to have suffered loss at some time in their lives, even just changing schools or something else. Everybody has. So there's no need to get all fixed on it and wondering quite what's going to happen or what's what. If someone is in already a difficult process and they are looking for you, then, hey, have the initial consultation. And it could be that you both decide, let's wait a month or 2 months or something and see how you're feeling then. But then the client might say, no, do you know what? I don't think I want to wait. I really don't think I want to. So you start off and you do a couple of sessions and you get to heaven as part one. And then lo and behold, oh, no, this is all too much for me. I don't think I can. I thought I wanted to do this, but I'm just not practicing. So then you decide to stop. And they will come back later. You see, there's all sorts of ways that this can be. It's 12:30. Is this our lunch break?
Yeah,
time for it.
So let's do our lunch break. And perhaps during that, if any other questions and things occur to you, bring them this afternoon. But all we've got on our official list, which isn't quite a timetable, is some clarifications on writing the case study. But you've all sent them in now, so you might not want to bother with that.
It would be good for our next one.
It could be good for you. Okay, if you having written one, yes, then perhaps the things you came across in writing that, we could raise some of those issues if you wanted. Yes.
I would love that.
Okay.
How long do we have for lunch?
Yeah, I was going to ask that as well. How long do we have? How long would you like? What time is it for you, Pia, at the moment?
What is it? 9:30 at night.
It's 9:30. Okay, yes, so it's not
time difference. It's not so bad.
Oh, you've changed an hour, have you? Yes, right. Okay. So Do we need a full hour, or shall we say 45 minutes to have a...
How does that fit with you, Bev?
Yeah, 45 minutes is fine.
Yeah.
You've got a dog to walk. Oh, no, maybe
no,
not.
No, she doesn't walk now. No. Yeah.
Still needs loving and cuddling.
Yes. Oh, yes, there's all of that. Of course there is. Of course there is.
Yeah.
Okay, 45 minutes then is 1:15 in England. Okay. So let's go and do that. And maybe we have a few tears left over and we want to just sort of have a little space on our own anyway. Thank you. I'm just suddenly aware we didn't talk to Sebastian about if he had lost, did we? So we won't do it now because we're going to lunch. But you were asking questions rather than telling stories if you wish to. So we'll come.
Of course. I love sharing. Why not?
We will revisit that then this afternoon. Now we've all talked about lunch. I think we'd better go and have it, hadn't we? Okay. Remind me, we're going to talk to Sebastian, number one, after lunch.
Okay. See you. Enjoy.
Okay. All right. All right. See you.